every heart there is a room, a sanctuary safe and strong, to heal the wounds from lovers past, until a new one comes along.
Nathan Gunn is an American opera baritone whose career has taken him to the world's great stages in productions of everything from classic operas to new and untested works of contemporary music and American music theater. He and his wife, musician Julie Jordan Gunn, teach in the same music school where they help stage several productions every year. But they still find time to work together and perform music they love for audiences. Nathan and Julie Gunn are performing tomorrow night for the Fontana series at 7:30 p.m. in the Dalton Center Recital Hall at Western Michigan University. I asked Nathan to tell us what to expect tomorrow night.
It is what we call, Julie and I call it a Julie Nathan show, kind of. It's our version of a cabaret. And, of course, a cabaret, when I first did even moved into this direction at all, it really came out of a desire to sing mostly whatever songs I felt like singing rather than what was traditionally acceptable and in classical music and classical recitals. And I was asked to do a cabaret, quote-unquote, a show at Cafe Carlyle in New York. And so I looked it up, and it turns out a cabaret is like any other song event, except they call it a cabaret if people are drinking, I guess. Like, if you have a glass of wine in your hand, it's cabaret. Well, so I had to move away from that and decided to put together about 20 songs from a wide variety of composers that are organized in such a way that it tells a bit of a story. It's kind of an introduction to who we are, who Julie and I are, and goes through what tends to happen is it tends to go through different phases of life, like sort of fun, childlike songs, and then move, you know, and then moving into more young adult life, falling in love, and the kind of retirement type feeling and peace at the end. That's kind of in general the way it's organized. But there are songs that that range from like a group called Cake, for example, that is kind of an indie group out of the West Coast. And they caught my attention because a friend of mine sent me a recording of theirs. And the song is literally about an opera singer. Like, I am an opera singer. And then it goes on to talk about what opera singers do. And I thought, wow, that's exactly right. That's exactly what they do. And it made me laugh. So I thought, you know, we would add that to the program just as an introduction. So it has everything ranging from Cake to Irving Berlin to the great Charles Ives, Bill Bolcom, living composers like Ben Moore, and some even the traditional song, Parting Glass. And what Julie and I tend to do is try to make it as close of a connection to the audience as possible through talking a little bit to them, giving them our ideas, maybe discussing a bit about the song or what's leading up to this particular piece or why we chose to put it in there. Nothing very stuffy. Over the past 25 years of singing around the world, doing, you know, everything from really esoteric things as foreign languages Finnish to, you know, folk songs, what I've discovered is that what we really want to do is communicate as purely as we can over that hour and a half that we have with an audience. And sometimes that entails not wearing, you know, the gown and tuxedo because nobody else is. Maybe just addressing the audience at different times, or certainly singing in the language that they speak often helps, making sure it's audible and really taking the mystery out of this and putting the humanity back into it. Because all these songs are about people's experiences that everybody has, And hopefully they're told in a way with the help of the composer and the librettist or songwriter, poet, and us, told in a way that that expresses some of those experiences as perfectly as possible. So, in sum, that's it. And what's great, as we were talking about earlier, is now with technology we can use our Fourscore on our iPads and mix and match and move things around and do all sorts of fun stuff. So if we're so moved by, you know, the music gods, we might just change things. We have our entire library at our disposal on stage. So, you know, if you want to hear something, just shout it out.
Oh, my.
Maybe not. Okay, I take that back.
Do you ever blame yourself if the audience just won't wake up or won't respond?
Yeah, usually I think it's, well, so, you know, I mean, I tell students of mine, because I teach as well, I say, you know, I tell them, look, not everybody needs what you have to offer, and that's okay. But even if half the people do, that's still a lot more than all of our politicians out there who are leading our country. So, you know, you've got that on your side.
I've seen it happen a few times where us Kalamazooans do take a little bit of convincing. You sit there with a lot of blank faces for a while, and then it finally kind of breaks.
Well, I don't know if people know this, but I grew up in South Bend, Indiana, and I know, you know, my whole family still lives there. And I know the area. And even with my family, who is not really a musical family, didn't come from music or anything like that, they'll still go, you know, when they come see an opera or a recital or a cabaret or whatever, a musical that I might be doing, they're still not exactly, the things that worry them are, am I wearing the right clothes? When do I applaud? Is it okay that I applaud? How do I, you know, is my opinion about the songs, my wife's side of the family is much more musical, but they're even reluctant to give opinions about certain pieces because they don't want to sound foolish. And what I have to say is essentially clap when you want, enjoy it, be like, go in there with the attitude of a child and enjoy it or don't, and then clap if you want to, don't if you don't want to. It's really about a conversation through music. You know, music and laughter are two things unique to human beings, among others. But it's something that I really want people to feel free to enjoy. And what's great about this kind of artistic experience or this kind of communal experience is that, one, it's live. And we don't get a lot of that very much. So the sound you hear on stage is literally going into your head, right? The sound, my body vibrating with noise, is going into your ears and making an effect on you, which is an amazing thing. And the sound that's happening at the piano as well. It's all sorts of things can happen. And I'm very happy to tell stories about when things don't go right. And, audiences sort of love the mistakes more than the perfectly polished performance. And you can have a very personal experience in this kind of setting while at the same time having a very communal experience. And it's one of those rare things. It is there for people to experience, and you can't take a snapshot of it. You can't take a recording of it. It's there. It's part of your life forever. And then it's over.
It's a very close connection that's established.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You have worked with your wife, the piano collaborator, Julie Jordan Gunn, for a long time, I assume. And
longer than we've been married.
Longer than you've been married. You also worked together on the faculty at the University of Illinois. Does that lead to musical discussions, or do you mostly put those things in different categories?
No, we're always talking about it. We're always coming up with new projects. We're, of course, working with students all the time. We have, at our program, it's called Lyric Theater at Illinois, that I designed and now we co-direct. We workshop new pieces by composers all around the world. We do opera scenes. We do other kinds of musical theater scenes and things like that for studio class. We do three main stage operas every year, play recitals, coach kids, teach them lessons. I mean, it's programming and whatnot for the Kranert Center for the Performing Arts is a big part of what we do, not to mention all the different projects that we either collaborate doing around, you know, travel around doing together, or other things that aren't associated necessarily with the university that I go off to do, and she of course helps me get those prepared and sends me on my way. So it's kind of all integrated into the house and the family.
You must have a lot of students that come to the studio with a lot of hip hop listening in their backgrounds. Mm-hmm. That's such a common form of music these days. Is it, if you didn't grow up with it, have you tried to find ways to bring it into your conscious, your musical repertoire or consciousness, and find things you can, ways to break it down and put it back together and sort of share that language with your students?
Well, I have 5 children, so I am constantly kept up on the latest hip hop that is out there. I, just like any other kind of music, either like it if it's good or don't like it if it's bad, and I have opinions about it. You know, I think Eminem, he writes not all the stuff, but a lot of it is actually quite good. He's, you know, he's sort of the real deal, as well as, what's that other guy's name? It's Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah.
Another one. Is that his name, Kendrick Lamar? Yeah, that's another one that I like, too. I mean, of course, I can't do it, nor would I ever, but, you know, it's, you know, there's good and bad, and I try to stay up. But then again, we get students who, like one of our students that's singing Leporello during Don Giovanni in our program. And that's coming up really soon. And one of the kids who's singing Leporello, the music he is really into, and he's from a, you know, an upper middle class African-American family from Detroit. The music he is really into is barbershop quartets. He geeks out on barbershop quartets. And, you know, you never know with these kids. They have all sorts of wild interests. Julie has a career preparation class, and at one point one of her favorite times is the day where they all come up and say who their hero is, and you'd be really surprised. I mean, some are YouTube stars, some are, you know, Jesus. I mean, you know, some you never know. You really never know. And that's what's great about what I find really great about teaching. And the more, I notice this with performers, but also with composers, the more they bring into their music and their performances this experience that they've had musically and just in life, obviously it becomes unique. It becomes unique to them and it becomes their voice. And that's really something that I think all of us are mostly looking for when it comes to enjoying art that people make. Nothing put on, no particular agenda, just tell us who you are and let's communicate.
I'm speaking with baritone singer Nathan Gunn, who will appear with his wife, Julie Gunn, tomorrow night at 7:30 in the Dalton Center Recital Hall at Western Michigan University, a concert presented by Fontana. And Nathan, I know you combine high opera, American musicals, new music, contemporary styles in your career. I'm wondering if there's an argument to be made for kind of the breadth of that kind of singing, and also an argument to be made for someone who sticks entirely to one style.
I don't actually know anybody who, any singers, let's say. I don't know any singers that only enjoy classical singing. They might not get paid to do it, you know, the other stuff, but they enjoy it and are, you know, sort of in know it and like it. And sometimes, you know, when classical singers try to sing jazz, it sounds pretty bad, right? Because they can't quite free themselves up to do that or whatever. But they can, yeah, but they can enjoy it on their own. And I think that eclectic view of, Julie and I, for our 20th wedding anniversary, decided to take a trip, and we wanted to go someplace we hadn't been before, someplace that was completely outside the Western music world, and we went to Morocco. And it was interesting. You know, I recorded some of the music that came out of there, the Berber music, and strangely enough, you know, it doesn't sound that different from like a polka or, you know, an Irish jig or something like that in some respects. But having those different sounds in my head and those different kinds of ways of tuning and tonality and instruments and singing and whatnot broadens the creative possibilities. It might not be what I do, or it might not be what someone else does, but it certainly is helpful when it comes to growth as a musician. But the thing is, you know, I have one of my daughters is a cellist, and the thing about playing a classical instrument, though, is it just takes so much practice to get it right. You know, for example, the way I define the difference between a folk song and a classical song or an art song, let's say a folk song and an art song, is an art song is written down. You actually have to play the notes or sing the notes that are on the page. A folk song, you can kind of mess with it a little bit. And for classical instrumentalists, they have to just, in order to play the stuff that's been written, they have to practice so much that it doesn't give them much of a, it doesn't give them much time to do anything else.
Well, I'm very much looking forward to this eclectic. And
it is eclectic, but they all are. The thing is, you have to, what's great about it is if we're doing our job, yes, you're enjoying the tune, but you're also really listening to the story.
Yeah.
And the tunes are all great regardless of who wrote it. And if I were to put them all in German, I bet everybody would think it was like some sort of, you know, German art song thing. But the stories are fantastic. And we're looking forward to getting to know the audience there in Kalamazoo. And just a shout out to my niece Jasmine. So Jasmine Stahl, we'll see you there too. So I can't wait to see you.
Okay. Well, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, Nathan, and see you soon.
Okay, see you soon. Thank you.
That I'm stealing, but you're innocent when you dream. When you dream, you're innocent. When you dream, you're innocent. When you dream.